Oops. No. Did you hit the pause?
Yes, it's paused. You can go ahead.
Okay. All right. So I wanted to provide a little context to Margarito, because as we'll see, I think he actually comes out of a very deep ethno-intellectual context. And his life, as Elisa just explained it, actually fits within a pattern. Last year, we celebrated the 250th anniversary of the arrival of Latino science and medicine in California, beginning in 1769. So I've been doing a lot of research on the late Enlightenment in science and medicine in Mexico. And of course, California was part of that from about 1769 to about 1822, let's say independence. So I've been delving deeply into the Enlightenment. And as it turns out, I had an informant, Catalina Bautista, Margarito's younger sister, lived in Tlautla and in Osumba. I used to spend summers with her. And as she would talk, as other relatives of her generation would talk, they have very long memories. So the way they would talk, the Mexican Revolution was just last week. The Battle of Puebla, Cinco de Mayo, at which a Bautista fought, in theory. Well, that was 2 weeks ago. Mexican independence, oh, that was maybe last month. And then they keep going back further and further and further as they would talk and give stories, etc. And finally, they would get to the place where they would say, oh, y antes de los españoles, before the Spanish came, and then proceed to share their stories. So she was pretty serious about this. One day, must have been the mid-70s, she came to me and she said, she wagged her finger at me and she said, you will have a son. I mean, she was not asking me. She was telling me, you're going to have a son and you will call him Axayacatzin. And I asked, well, tia Cata, why would I call him Axayacatzin? That's kind of a mouthful. And so she said, antes de los españoles, he was the last king of Atlautla. I thought, oh, interesting. Well, shortly after that, I was walking down the main street in Mexico City, and I was going to my favorite bookstore, the Fondo de Cultura Económica, right there on Reforma, and I saw this book in the window, Relaciones Originales de Chalco a Maquemecan. Well, I knew the names, Chalco a Maquemecan, because, see, to get to Atlautla from Mexico City, you pass through Chalco, and you get on this little bus, and then you go to a Maquemecan. And then you go to Osumba, you get off, and you take what we laughingly call the metro, the last mile, to Atlautla. So I, kingdom of Chalco Maquemecan. Didn't Tia Cata say the last king was Axayacatzin? So I ran into the store, picked up the book. Did he mention Atlautla? And yes, there enough was the Chronicle of Atlautla, which was founded in the year 1238, nearly 800 years ago. I thought, wow. And as we go through the chronicles, it was clear Atlautla was an altepl, it was called a city-state, and the name Atlautla means the place of ravines, lugar barrancoso. It was founded in 1238, and it was ruled by a group of hereditary rulers, you know, kind of like the princes and kings of England or whatever else, called Tlatoani. And then they sat atop an entire social structure. This all, plus the lands, comprised the altepl, the Atlautla. So I was trying to find Axayacatzin. So I ran down the list of rulers. Here you have Itzcoahuitzin, Tlotle, Huaycón, and suddenly got to 1488, and something happened. And it turned out that the kingdom of Chalco a Maquemecan was conquered by the 8th Aztec emperor, Ahuizotl. And kicked out the ruling Tlatoani, and Ahuizotl put in his own administrator. And in this book, it says, end of the kingdom of Chalco a Maquemecan. Well, then the Spanish came just 30 years later. And in this recreation, Cortez coming through the Paso de Cortez, which is maybe about 5 miles from Atlautla, you notice the bunch of indigenous warriors. Cortez did not conquer Tenochtitlan. the hundreds of thousands of warriors from the dozens, probably hundreds of Altepetls that had been conquered and incorporated against their will into the Aztec Empire were angry as hell, and they saw Cortez as a game changer. So they said, oh, let's use this guy. And Cortez had many, many allies, starting with the Tlaxcaltecas. If you go to the city hall in Tlaxcala, it's kind of interesting. It's like the negative image of everything you see in Mexico City, like Moctezuma's this great emperor. Well, in Tlaxcala, Moctezuma's the great murderer, because they had been fighting with each other. Tenochtitlan could never conquer Tlaxcala. It took them 200 years. Tlaxcaltecans, they threw in their lot with Cortez, as did many other Altepetls. And thanks to the hundreds of thousands of indigenous warriors, actually, Tenochtitlan fell. After it fell, then the Spanish were faced with the problem. There were fewer than 5,000 Spanish by 1530. How the heck do you govern 25 million indigenous? Well, it turns out the Spanish looked around and they saw that a number of these rulers, Tlatoani, had already become Christians and they were allies. And they already had a ruling structure. They were administrating law, collecting taxes, doing public works, etc. So they already had a complete government already set up based on the old Altepetl. So what the Spanish decided to do, the crown decided to use religion and repurpose the Tlatoani so that the Tlatoani would do the governing work for them. So what they had to do was become Christian if they weren't already, and many of them already at that point were, and then they were allowed to return to the Altepetl, but no longer as a Tlatoani, but now they were called Gobernador de Indios, governors of Indians, or Indio Principal, the principal Indian, still hereditary, but no longer with fealty to the Aztec emperor, but to the Spanish crown. So most Tlatoani said, hey, all I got to do is get baptized, I'm in. So the Tlatoani became gobernadores, and they continued to govern as they had before. And they continued to administer the economy, the markets, and collect taxes, contributions, which they then sent now not to Tenochtitlan, but to Mexico City. But pretty much they functioned as they had for hundreds of years. But the gobernadores now, the former Tlatoani, the gobernadores, also thought, you know, we're not just patsies. We're the rulers here. We need to take care of our Altepetl. We need to take care of our citizens. And so they actually repurposed the state and the church to define the Altepetl. So the first thing that a gobernador would do after he'd been baptized and told, okay, you can continue ruling, he said, well, we're under Spanish law now. I want some guarantee that our lands are our lands. And the Spanish did that and would give them, they were called títulos primordiales. That is, they were sort of the original land deeds. But what they did is they guaranteed that this Altepetl would continue to have its land. Indians could not be just willy-nilly moved off. And of course, if the lands were secure, then the economic base could continue as it had before in that particular Altepetl. For example, here we have some indigenous during the Enlightenment still living in an Altepetl making cochineal, red dye from cochineal. Now, they had become Christians. There was the formal church, but there were almost no indigenous priests. Does this sound familiar? At least this is not a new issue. So they were not allowed to do anything inside the church, but they're asked to be an auxiliary externally to the church and using their functions as gobernadores and their ability to raise funds, etc., to organize the processions like Semana Santa, Corpus Christi, etc., and all the fiestas, which cost money. So the gobernadores would then take on this function. But then they realized, okay, the Catholic Church thinks it's got a lock on all these miracles, but it turns out the gobernadores then became custodians of indigenous miracles. Indians would recount their experience of God, now the Western God, but it was their experience of it, but it was outside the bounds of the formal church. The one that's probably most well-known is the case of La Virgen de Guadalupe. She appeared to the poor peasant Juan Diego. She had a brown skin and she spoke a Nahuatl. This was an indigenous miracle. And here we have this one of many paintings showing Juan Diego showing the stilma and that had her portrait, but it didn't come from Rome, and it didn't come from the bishop. It came from indigenous, and this happened all around. In fact, usually as an altepetl and its Tlatoani came into the Christian church, they would then come to recite that, oh, this image came to us, this statue came to us, this painting floated by us, and this was our experience of God, so now we embrace Christianity. So, in fact, this is in Ameca, which is not far from Atlautla. There had been a cave, the Sacro Monte, had been used for hundreds of years with indigenous miracles there, and suddenly we have now a Christian miracle in a repurposed indigenous shrine. And I forgot to mention that the Virgin of Guadalupe appeared to Juan Diego right at the exact same spot where there had been an altar to the earth goddess Tonantzin, again, for centuries. A Freudian would say, oh, I see why. You know, for the folks there, it didn't matter. You had your miracles, we've got our miracles. And because we had our miracles, our experience of God, we're now good with the church, which means we're good Christians. So we had what Lockhart called a double mistaken identity. The Spanish thought, oh, these indigenous are doing exactly everything we want them to do. And the indigenous are saying, oh, this new crown and this new religion are doing everything we need them to do so that we could continue our life in the city-state Altepetl. And the indigenous who were able to retain their lands through the Títulos Primordiales actually had a fairly successful economic existence up through the middle of the 19th century. Here are some Indian women from the mountains. Now let's start to put this in the ethno-intellectual context. Chimalpaín was the one who actually had written this book about the Relaciones Originales. His full name was Francisco de San Antón Muñón Chimalpaín Cuatlehuanitzin, but everyone knows him as Chimalpaín. He was a descendant of the Tlatoani rulers, hereditary rulers, and he collected a number of documents from the Altepetls. Not all the books were burnt. And he also made copies of Títulos Primordiales. And he sat down to write the history of each of these Altepetls so that this history would not be forgotten. This book obviously was originally written in Nahual. It had just been translated into Spanish, this particular one by Silvia Rendon. And that was the book that caught my eye on this bookstore on the Reforma. That gave me the history of Atlautla. So the kingdom of Chalco Amaquemeca, very familiar. You leave Mexico City, you go to Chalco, you get on the bus, you go to Amaquemeca, then you go out past Osumba to Atlautla. Sor Juan Inés de la Cruz, often called La Décima Musa, the 10th Muse, was baptized at the church at Chimalhuacan, which is right butts up next to Atlautla. She was an intellectual. She was a feminist. Her famous poem, I mean, Tia Cata beat that into me. Hombres necios que acusáis a la mujer sin razón, sin ver que sois la ocasión de lo mismo que culpáis. Oh, silly, stupid men who are always accusing women of the same thing that you do. I mean, she had a very sharp tongue. And she was an indigenous. She wrote poetry and plays in Nahual, as well as in Spanish, as well as in Latin. But she always led with her indigenous and feminist side. So she was born down here in San, or not born, she was baptized in San Vicente, Chimalhuacan. She was actually born in Mexico City. She was an illegitimate child. And so she lived between Chimalhuacan and Amecameca. Then Jose Antonio Alzate, who was born in Osumba, Otsumpan, lugar de cuevas. He was a cousin of Sor Juana. He was a physician, he was a scientist, he was a publisher, and he was an indigenous, and his goal was to Mexicanize the Enlightenment. He was dealing with bodies of knowledge. Because he was a physician, he was familiar with Nahual, with Mesoamerican healing practices, and here came the European healing practices, trying to obliterate the indigenous ones, and he fought many a battle, even in terms of importing the Linnaean system of categorizing plants. He said, well, the Mesoamericans had a system, why don't we use that? He was very much an indigenous. And so here we have Osumba. And in fact, because he was born there, he's their famous son. It's now called Osumba the Alzate. And there's a statue, a bust of him right in the middle of town. In 1790, doing some street work right by the catedral, suddenly by mistake, the Aztec sunstone was unburied. They weren't looking for it, but there it was. And it caused a huge sensation because here's the Enlightenment. We're trying to understand things. We're using reason, rationality, etc. And Alzate began exploring a lot of ruins, Xochicalco, Cuicuilco, Teotihuacan, and became clear to many leaders of the Enlightenment in Mexico, hey, you know, Mexico had a history before 1492 and we really don't understand it very well. Maybe we need to understand it. So that's, this is sort of the beginning of a history that really took seriously things that happened before arrival of the Cortez. Now let's put little Atlautla in the middle of these nearly 800 years. And yes, Atlautla is still there. So Atlautla from 1238 to 1552 was an altepetl. From 1488 to about probably 1522, you had an administrator imposed by Tenochtitlan. When Tenochtitlan fell, Atlautla recuperated its Tlatoani, the ruling lines. So I'm not sure if people from Atlautla actually joined the Tlaxcaltecas in defeating the Tenochtecas. I wouldn't be surprised, but I have not yet found any data on that. Nonetheless, the Atlautecas realized, okay, we now have a new state. We have a new church. They want to use us. We'd like to use them. So the Tlatoani became Christians. They built a church. This was their indigenous miracle. They became Christians. And I got many stories from the family about how exactly that happened step by step. It's interesting. They talk about it as if it happened. So they went from being Tlatoani to becoming Gobernador de Indios or Indio Principal. And of course, if you are Gobernador, the first thing you want to do is get titles to your land to ensure your altepetl still has access to the lands. And this is the Titulo Primordial for the lands in Atlautla, dated 1552. And you notice this beautiful, beautiful penmanship. But if you look at it closely, this is written in Nahuatl, not in Spanish. Now, 200 years later, 1781, in this document, it is signed by Bartolomé Bautista, Gobernador Pasado. In fact, this particular document that I was able to take a photograph of was some official document because we have four signatories here, all of whom are Gobernador Pasado, descendants of Tlatoani, functioning now as part of the Spanish state, but also independently. Then we had the Gobernador Actual and then another Gobernador Actual. So they're functioning kind of as a ruling unit. This is 1781, the year that Los Angeles is founded. And on a slightly earlier document, here we have mentioned Don Blas Jose Bautista, who is given the title of Indio Principal. Two things there. Indio Principal, like the principal Indian, but he is also given the honorific Don. And not a lot of people were called Don, and very few indigenous were called Don, unless you were descendants of the Tlatoani, the formal nobility. You're still an important ruler. So he was given both honorifics. And they were related. In fact, Tia Cata had talked about Blas Jose, and she talked about Bartolomé, but she was a little bit unsure exactly where he fit in. I believe that Bartolomé was the father and Blas Jose was the son, I believe. And in this document, by the way, they're certifying that these things have been the custom since our ancestors. And by the way, the other side of the Titulo Primordial that they call locally Las Escrituras del Volcán. You notice these figures over here, kind of pretty. And this particular figure is called, his name is Bartolometzin Cuasochil. Now, if you know Mexican families, we tend to recycle names a lot. And Bartolomé appears a lot in the Bautista family. Was he the ancestor that got baptized, paid a peso, and was given the surname Bautista at random? I asked my tío Adán Pius that, and And he told me, why is it that we do not have a an Aztec surname? So now they're gobernadores, and we have our indigenous miracles. We built the church in Atlautla. We have the church in Chimalhuacan, their sites of the holy. Now, we come to Bartolo Bautista, short for Bartolome, often referred to by the family as Bartolito. The photograph in the middle in a French intervention soldier's outfit. This is not a picture of him, but family legend is that Bartolo Bautista fought at the Battle of Puebla on Cinco de Mayo. Then there's a whole long story that goes with it. He was the son of Don Blas Jose Bautista, Indio Principal, who I believe was the son of Bartolome Bautista. Certainly this Bartolome could not live long enough to have fought in the Battle of Puebla in 1862. I have yet to get all that lineage out. And then they may have possibly been descendants of Bartolome Metzin. That's the most likely route. And of course, Bartolo Bautista was the father of Jose de la Luz, who in turn was Margarito's father. So here we have the descendants of the Tlatoani, their gobernadores, Indio Principal. Was Bartolo part of that activity? I don't know, because something happened that suddenly did away with 600 years of this Tlatoani gobernador Indio Principal. What happened was the Constitution of 1857. And by the way, yes, if you notice, this is headlined Los Angeles, California. We had a number of Spanish language newspapers being published here in California since 1851, including here in Los Angeles. So here, Spanish-speaking readers are being introduced to this new constitution in Mexico. And in earlier issues of this, they had to print it bit by bit. The Constitution of 1857 reaffirmed Mexico's abolition of slavery, which was done in 1810, reaffirmed Mexico's racial equality and citizenship, which was done in 1810, reaffirmed Mexico's continuation of the Iberian tradition that married women had property rights independent of their husband. Not bad constitutional values, but for the descendants of the Tlatoani, for the Altepetl, it was deadly, because suddenly 600 years of this form of government was eliminated by the stroke of a pen. Because the Ley Lerdo of 1857, in part, first confiscated the church real estate holdings, but also eliminated the indigenous holdings, the Altepetl holdings, because the idea was to move the indigenous into individual ownership of land rather than having corporate and common ownership. Well, it took a while for the Constitution of 1857 to become law. You had the Guerra de Reforma, then you had the French intervention, then this, that, the other. But finally, in 1874, Atlautla formally leaves the old Tlatoani Altepetl gobernador form of governance and incorporates itself into the modern Republic of Mexico as a municipio. None of this Altepetl business. 4 years later, Margarito was born. Now, he had to have heard all of this history. I mean, they still talk about it. In 2020, he was born just right after the gobernadores had been essentially eliminated, but the people were still there. So I'm sure he heard this day in and day out, this history going all the way back, even to antes de los españoles. And Bautistas continue to hold office in Atlautla, only now they have to belong to a political party, they have to run for office, they have to get elected. But since World War II ended, we've had four presidentes municipales that have been Bautistas. The Mexican Revolution broke out, and Atlautla, Ozumba, Chimalhuacan, Amecameca are right in the middle of Zapata country. And of course, as Elisa has just explained, one of the big issues was land. Remember, the Altepetls had just been done away with in 1857, probably not effectively until 1870. That meant big landowners could move in, break up the lands. And a common occurrence is that someone would steal these títulos primordiales, burn them so that the indigenous would not have a copy of the Titulo Primordial, then the landowners could move in, move them off. So it caused a lot of social upset in Mexico. Zapata was the front, if you will, in the south. Pancho Villa was in the north, but Pancho Villa wasn't that interested in the Titulos. Pancho Villa was not an indigenous. Margarito up here, along with battling with the U.S. church, also organized a new group called the Sociedad Zapatista. Does this sound familiar? Ejército Libertador del Sur, with chapters throughout the American West, and these chapters raised funds that Margarito would then send to Zapata's army. And so he had chapters in Montana, Idaho, Utah, New Mexico, Texas, Arizona, and California. He was an inveterate organizer of one sort than another. And he had to have been quite aware of this double mistaken identity, where these foreigners come in, use their political power and the church to, they think, get the indigenous doing what they want them to do. And the indigenous, in turn, in a judo-like fashion, use the state and this new religion for their own purposes. So basically, as I would see it, just as the Spanish crown repurposed the Tlatoani, what grandpa did is he noticed that this U.S. church had repurposed indigenous history. And like the descendant of the Tlatoani, Margarito, grandpa, repurposed the U.S. church for what he wanted, his own indigenous miracle, which would be this new millennium that was going to come out of the Mexican Revolution. And this is the title page to his book, Dedicado a los Héroes de Nuestra Revolución Mexicana, dedicated to the heroes of our Mexican Revolution. So as I see what he did, in many ways, he kind of fits in this larger indigenous ethno-intellectual tradition of indigenous governance by leveraging the powers that be around them, the powers that be think they're making the indigenous do what they want them to do, and the indigenous use these foreign powers to continue doing what they want to do. And just last year, in fact, Grandpa Margarito, Great-Grandpa Jose de la Luz were honored by the town of Atlautla as personajes ilustres, famous people. Oh yes, and Tia Cata, you must call your son Axacayatzin. Okay, well, as I look carefully, by the way, at that Titulo Primordial, the person here, this indigenous person offering a branch to the Spaniard is Miguel Axacayatzin. Dang, she was right. He would have been then, in that sense, the last king, or at least the last of these rulers. But I couldn't put that onto my son. So he's called Diego, graduated from UC San Diego in econ and math. Thank you very much. I hope this provides a little bit of context for what Elisa was looking at as sort of a micro history.